Nets trail by three. Dinwiddie for the tie. Yes! Spencer Dinwiddie, Mr. Clutch.
There's a bounce pass. Harden gets it out to the youngster. Oh, a cold-blooded three for James Dudley.
Oh, an OT. Shot clock down to four. Dinwiddie the drive, the bump. Oh, it's good! A foul! Spencer Dinwiddie has been astounding.
You live long enough and you will see basically anything. Last night, good morning on a Thursday. Last night, the Rockets were up by 8 with 69 seconds to go in an NBA regular season game. They were up by 7 with 128 to go in overtime, and they lost. They lost the game.
It's rare to see a team blow two games in one night. The Rockets managed to blow two basketball games in one night last night.
In the last 20 years, the Houston Rockets are 682-0. That is 682-0 when they have led by 6 points or more in the last 30 seconds of any game in the regular season.
682-0?
Yeah, 682-0.
This is astounding. 682-0. I find it incapable of getting angry over anything that the Rockets do right now, particularly unless they show up and just don't compete at all. What am I going to say or do? Maybe if Eric Gordon had been able to play the entire game or something, then I would have said, like, well, hey, you're only down Capella and Chris Paul.
How?
You got Eric Gordon back. I don't know what to do or say.
How does a guy cut his leg and be unable to play in the game?
Well, because the Rockets play a little game called Spin the wheel of random absence. Daniel House's contract is a G League NBA two-way contract. And now, yes, you have James Ennis falling down the stairs in the dark and cutting his calf.
Yeah.
Yes. How does that happen?
You fall down the stairs. He's probably got carpet. Carpet's the worst. Either carpet or his cleaning lady used a new polish or something on the floor. That's the worst. And you specifically say, no wax! No wax! And we need to find this cleaning lady, this wax freak, and, you know, run her out of town on a rail, like, covered in hot wax.
Maybe she's from Brooklyn.
This is, no, cleaning lady or man. I don't mean to be sexist here. Whoever it is that cleans his apartment.
Could be a cleaning robot. Don't be offensive.
The Roomba.
True.
I'm going to sue Roomba. What the hell? The Roomba, defective Roomba, they haven't figured out a way to clean stairs yet.
They're awesome, by the way. I got one for Christmas. Oh, the things
you like them?
Yeah.
I've been, my results are mixed. You know what though? I got the, like, generation one. I didn't get the one that knows where it's going, so it just goes randomly around and weird. It'll clean the same spot 800 times and not go to the
good.
I need the one that has a little GPS thing.
Yes.
That shows exactly where it went.
Why am I robot obsessive compulsive?
So the random spots in Seth Payne's house that are very clean.
Yeah. Which I probably have slipped on because of it. Hence.
Likely.
Why I'm gonna sue Hoover Company or whoever makes Roomba.
I kind of feel about a player getting a cut on his leg in his house like Seth felt about the Texans offensive line. Like, if there's a question mark about some unit or something, then you're not allowed to get hurt. Like a Rockets player's not allowed to get injured in a random way in his
house when the
team is already playing, like, six guys, basically.
Right. The state they're in, unless you're really, really good, you're not allowed to get hurt. Have you not seen? The people that are allowed to get hurt are Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and Eric Gordon.
Yes.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's all you're allowed to do because this is a team that's playing with four guards. They're just rolling out. I don't know why. I would just prefer just five guards at this point. As many guards as you can get. I would have an all guard roster because why the hell not? But it hurts you at times. So, James Harden sounded particularly frustrated last night.
Yeah, he shoved the camera on his way into the locker room.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Ooh. Yeah. Camera was right in his face. It wasn't like a violent shove. It was just a one-handed shove.
Well, that was why the guy was in his way.
Yeah.
He's like, this is the sixth kind of defense I've seen tonight. He'd already seen five different. They're throwing every different variation of zone at him, and he's still figuring it out, and it just doesn't matter. I mean, like, I can't imagine what it's like to go out and, like, be scoring 50 points a night and sometimes it not being good enough.
I can't imagine what it's like to shoot 23 free throws. He shot 23 free throws last night. It is incredible what he's doing. And I keep on going back to this really stupid post on Deadspin, which I think is horrible at covering sports, but I sometimes hate read that website from time to time. And it was the Bucks finally figured out how to defend James Harden after he scored 42 points, by the way. And on this week, he has just had a, season high with 57 on Monday and a season high with 58 last night.
Well,
I think they try to, like, lure you in with these, with these headlines that claim certain things that aren't really true.
Yes.
I'm actually kind of grateful for this stretch, and I'm grateful for James Harden's frustration because, as he said, like, he's seen everything this year. Their teams are just throwing everything at him. Things that don't even make logical sense sometimes. They look like a Greg Williams defense. And that's going to serve him well come playoffs. Like, by the time, it's like he's wearing ankle weights right now, having to carry this team, this ball and chain around his ankles. And once he gets Chris Paul and Clint Capella and a full strength Eric Gordon back, it's going to feel like the easy, it's going to feel like a walk in the park. It's going to feel like a breeze. Now, that's an exaggeration. But having seen all this, this is what happens in the playoffs. Teams try different lineups, different defenses, everything on a night to night basis. The adjustments are so extreme from one night to the next that being able to adjust to it quickly serves you very well. So I think that it's not like he hasn't seen this before, but this is probably the most extreme version of it he's seen in the regular season since he's been here.
This was, again, this was so bizarre. It was such a bizarre loss. Again,
like, who the hell is Spencer Dinwiddie? And I know that he's actually had a very good season for Brooklyn, but what the hell? His name is Spencer Dinwiddie.
On January 16th, he's your daddy.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Daddy Dinwiddie.
I mean, the Nets are coming off of two really good wins in a row.
They're not bad.
They beat the Celtics earlier this week, too.
I mean, there are 500 teams. So it's not crazy to lose to them, but it's crazy to lose a game in which you lead again by 9 with 109. Let's think about this. If you lead a basketball game, if you lead a basketball game by ace with 109 to play, it feels mathematically impossible to lose that kind of game.
It is. Like you wouldn't
think they're in possession.
You wouldn't torch the Nets if they just gave up at that point.
No!
Yeah, you would, and up above a minute. You would, but you wouldn't even have your heart in it. Like, if the Nets had just given up, you'd been like, you'd like to see them, you know, run it out, but what are you gonna do? Like, that's how bad that is. 608-0? That's what the Rockets are when they're up by that much?
682-0.
682-0.
Yeah, when they're up by 6 in the final 30 seconds of regulation.
That's one of those things where it's torture to watch it in person, too. The experience that I have with watching like a late lead where it seems like the game is done, but since I am a good sports fan that paid my dollars to go to the game, I'm going to go and sit there until the actual end of said game. Syracuse playing Pittsburgh at the Carrier Dome over my at college. Syracuse, I think, was up 8. With basically a minute left.
I called that game.
Oh, you called that game.
I did.
The same thing happened because they kept on missing layups at the end.
Did you flip out? Can we get the audio?
That'll be tough. I was actually doing color commentary.
What kind of crap archive system do they have up there at that finest communication school in the country?
I'll tell you what. I think the double whammy was we called the game. And there's a person responsible, like someone on staff is responsible for recording the game.
Yeah. One of the freshmen.
We didn't have like a fancy skimmer like we have at Sports Radio 610. And that person did not hit record.
Oh, nice.
But I wasn't even doing the play-by-play anyway. But here's the thing about that. Because I went back and I actually rewatched the end of this Rockets-Nets game.
Yeah.
Just to kind of go through and like, okay, let's figure out how methodically this happened. And it wasn't as crazy as possible.
It's threes, man.
It's threes. Yeah. Syracuse had like 2 turnover off inbounds passes. That'll kill you.
And that's the blessing and the tragedy. And I guess that's one of the things that allows me to be more philosophical about this loss. It's that when you are the Rockets, it's hard to get, like, every now and then the sword cuts both ways. And every now and then, you know, like, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Every now and then, the threes are going to do you in by the opponent. That's just life. The Rockets owe a whole lot of success to the three-pointer. And every now and then, the other team is going to nail a few. It's not even just luck. It's flat out going to happen. So basically, I did the math, Mike. I did this in my head on my phone. So now, over the course of the Rockets' entire history, there is a 0.146% chance that they would blow that lead.
0.146.
The next time they're in that situation, where they're up by, what was the situation?
6.
Where they're up by 6 with 1 minute and...
It's even less. It's up by 6 or more with 30 seconds to go.
When they're up by 6 or more with 30 seconds to go, there is a 0.146% chance that they'll blow that lead. One out of 683 times.
So that's basically a little bit more than 1/10 of 1%.
That was how improbable that loss was given the Rockets' history.
All right.
At that point, it was a 0% chance, yes. You know, because of it had never happened before.
I'll get over it, I suppose. The only thing is they're banged up and the standings in the West are very, very compressed. That's the thing that kind of keep in mind.
These are the games that you really need to win Capella and Paul are out.
Yes.
And Eric Gordon is limited.
Exactly. Game Sunday.
Anybody nervous about Eric Gordon? I mean, he was approaching his minutes. He had to go to the locker room for a spell. I think it's just natural stuff. Right?
You know, considering that he played in this game, he looked good. It's just, you know, you got to manage his minutes. You need to have him back for a long period of time.
Yes.
Because I think if you keep going at this rate, Harden is going to run out of gas. I will keep saying that. I understand that what he's doing right now is absolutely incredible, but at some point, this is all going to catch up to him. It's just logic.
Meanwhile, we've got the conference championship games on Sunday, and Julian Edelman is big on this bet against us idea. So I guess the genesis is that the Patriots are underdogs, which I thought they were underdogs at some point earlier this season, but I guess not, because the last time the Pats were underdogs was, the 2015 season, week number 2 against Buffalo. Mm. And the last time they were underdogs in the playoffs was in 2014, when they did lose on the road to Denver. And I guess the last couple of times the Pats have been underdogs in the AFC Championship game, which has been on the road, they have actually lost those games. So technically, it would not be a bad bet based on history to go with Kansas City.
So you're saying this bet on us thing. I don't think people know what the bet on us thing is. I'm not sure I do.
Bet against us.
Okay.
Did I say bet on
us? No, you said bet against us, but I guess that's just okay. What's bet against us?
So bet against us is something that Edelman is doing. He posted a hype video on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah.
And he's also selling T-shirts.
Oh, he's selling T-shirts that say "Bet Against Us."
The Patriots logo with the "Bet Against Us" embedded in the Pats logo.
I both admire and despise this tactic. It's hard to keep a chip on your shoulder when you're as successful as the Patriots have been. But there's a part of it. There's part of me when I say, isn't that kind of beneath you guys? Are you really that concerned or sensitive about the fact that all of a sudden, for the first time in your life, this is like the homecoming queen all of a sudden realizing that maybe she's gotten to college and she's not hot crap anymore. Oh my gosh, there's a whole other universe out there where people don't kneel down and obey everything we say, regardless of how inspiring your story of coming back from your knee surgery with the help of PEDs. Might be.
Let's say
I resent that accusation.
Oh no! I mean, what? He had a PED suspension.
4 days.
He came back from
presented anyway.
He came back from his knee. He was suspended for PED.
It was a legend.
So 4 games.
The NFL's
later.
Out to get the Patriots.
But it's an impressive comeback from knee surgery. And nobody mentions the PED suspension. What if Adrian Peterson had come back and had the incredible year he had? But oh, by the way, he'd had a 4-game PED suspension. People would bat their eyes a little bit.
What if
the Patriots get these PED suspensions and people are just kind of like, well, it's not cheating.
It's the NFL.
It is cheating, but they got punished with no court.
NFL is cheating, trying to cheat the Patriots of what is right. Rightfully theirs. And look, they got a referee who's a Spygate truther. They got a guy who's actually I don't even know. I'm just gonna confuse them all. This guy's calling the game. What bogus crap? Bet against us.
What's that all about?
Khalif Blakeman?
One of the referees, yes, who apparently was a big part of one of the Patriots scandals. We're talking about the Deflategate one,
correct?
I think
it's Deflategate, yes.
Right. He is gonna be calling the game, the AFC Championship game.
So he was involved in the game.
He's a truther.
What do you mean he's a truther?
He's a horrible person. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's bad, bad by association.
No, a truther would be a guy that was actually on the Patriots' side. He'd be somebody that's like, no, the truth is that the Patriots did nothing.
They did nothing.
Versus the man was saying that they did do something.
The evil NFL.
What I'm saying is the Clive, if he was a truther, then the Patriots should actually be happy for it.
I think he's one of the people that dismissed science.
Yeah, okay.
Because the truther can cut both ways.
Okay, I'm honestly genuinely asking the question here. Well, are you saying
I'm making baseless accusations.
Are you accusing him of being against the Patriots?
Everyone's against the Patriots.
All right.
Yeah, I'm actually with Seth on this one.
Right.
Because a truther can be on both sides.
And typically a truther is somebody that is like... somebody that says, no, the current prevailing narrative is wrong. This is what happened. So a truther in this instance would be somebody that's defending the Patriots.
Yeah, yes. That makes sense. Yeah. I'm actually wondering if I could buy this shirt if the Chiefs actually won on Sunday. But I don't think I could, because the shirt makes it seem like I would be a Patriots fan.
And this is sanctioned by the Patriots if it's got the logo on it and everything.
I guess it is sanctioned.
You have to pay his licensing fee and everything.
I really don't like that they made the shirt. I don't like that. I mean, come on. Don't do that.